Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us online Dick Couch, who is the author of The Warrior Elite, but we're going to be talking about a new book he's come out with called Downrange, Navy SEALs in the War on Terrorism. Mr. Couch, are you there?
Yes, I am, Doctor. Happy to have you on your program here.
Well, I appreciate so very much your being with us. And, of course, you were a Navy SEAL yourself, weren't you, in another era?
Yes, sir. Back when Moby Dick was a minnow, I was in the SEAL teams.
And, of course, it's a fascinating book going into the background of this, of the training of the SEALs and then some of the things that they've been involved in. And truly, the SEALs are warriors, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are. They're the maritime proponents of the Special Operations Command, and we have all types of warriors in this fight right now, but Navy SEALs are just one of them.
All right, fine. Now, of course, as I've read your book, I felt sometimes that there was a certain element of frustration. Sometimes you couldn't really do what was logical. Of course, when you're in the military, you do what you're told to do. And on one occasion, some of the SEALs had the opportunity to actually board a boat that had on it, presumably, the man who was behind the bombing of the Marine barracks in 1983 in Beirut, and they weren't allowed to do it. Why was that? I mean, so often we see this, it almost as if people in command in Washington, D.C. are doing everything they can to protect the terrorists, at least until, of course, we got into 911.
Well, that particular incident, of course, I was approaching this from the frustration of the guys who were loaded, sitting aboard the helos. They're turning. They're ready to go. They want to go. They do what they've trained so long and so hard to accomplish. A decision was made, and I talked to them about this. A decision was made not to go. Now, we can, you can almost immediately fly off the handle and say, well, there you go, this administration or those politicians or what have you. But sometimes, further up the line, somebody looks at it and says, we don't have confirmation, there's something else going on in the world, or there is some reason not to do this. Now, future events may have proved that you should have gone ahead and done it, and maybe they don't, but I don't fault young men for being very frustrated if they're held in check when they really want to go out and do something they think needs to be done. But they know, and I kind of understand that you work in a command structure, and you go when the powers that be say you go. That's just the way it works.
And that's the way it works. But, of course, my concern is that sometimes the people in the command structure have a different agenda than these warriors out there who really are trying to defend the country and really believe in what they're doing.
Well, that's perhaps. When you get into the military command structure, it works its way back up through. I tend to think admirals and generals and people like that, they were young men once. They understand what's going on. They want the best outcome for the country, for the service, and for the men involved. When you get in the political arena, then you, as a military person, you step back, because we definitely work with our elected leaders. This is not a military. There's no military hunters in the United States. The military is definitely subordinate to the political leadership, and if you're not happy, you vote differently, I guess.
Yeah, well, I guess that, and of course, your point, and really the story itself, it deals with the life and death situation these men face, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this afternoon is Mr. Couch, Mr. Dick Couch, who himself is a former Navy SEAL. And he's written a number of books about the Navy SEALs. His latest one is called Downrange, and it goes into the activities of the SEALs both before and after the 9-1-1 attack. But they were really involved in this war even before 9-1-1, weren't they?
Yes, the terrorists have been at war with us a lot longer than we think we've been at war with them, going back to 79 and the Marine barracks back then. But even into the 90s, their antennae were up. We knew that things weren't right in a lot of places there in the Mideast, and they were looking at this target. And specifically, I think, from the military standpoint, ever since the first World Trade Center bombing in 1983, the tendrils of this organization were leading back to certain nations in the Mideast. And so they have been out there working against that. Since the first Gulf War, of course, they dealt a great deal with the oil embargo placed on Iraq and Saddam Hussein during the intervening time between the first Gulf War and the most recent one.
Well, of course, you start out by talking about the fact that we're involved in really a class of civilizations. You refer to Samuel Huntington's book, which I certainly think is so important. People have to see the big picture. And of course, you allude to the big picture and sort of back away from that, but it really is almost frightening, the implications of the big picture. Would you like to sort of explore your thoughts and as much as you want to say about that? Because I think it's important people understand that this is not simply a very temporary war. We have launched upon a war that may never end during our lifetime. So pick up this story.
I think that what you say is very much the case. And yes, I did step back from that. There are some great thinkers who talk about clash of civilizations. My job is to talk about young men who are trained to go to the fight. What do they think, feel, act, and how do they conduct themselves when they're when they go in harm's way in the current war on terrorism? So that's where my focus was. When you step back and look at it, yes, there is a larger picture, and you'd be surprised how many of these young men understand it, or maybe understand that they're playing a small role in a larger thing. I personally believe that this war, certainly the attacks in the World Trade Center, this is part of the war for control of Islam. Who's going to
hold that thought right there for just a moment as we bring our other stations right back on board right now?
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. Couch. Dick Couch, and we're talking about his book Downrange, and we were just commenting that Dick had talked in his book about Samuel Huntington's book, The Class of Civilizations, and of course his comment just before we came back was that the real issue would appear to be who is going to control the Muslim world. Is it going to be the radical Wahhabis from Saudi Arabia with their extremist views, or is it going to be the more moderate concepts of Islam, which really were dominant before recently? Would that be a fair appraisal?
I think so. It is a fair appraisal, and that's why I think, the current administration could have certainly, gone to Afghanistan, did what they did, declared victory, and said that's it. But we extended this into Iraq. I think Iraq has become a key player in this, because if we prevail there and they enjoy an economic democracy and then perhaps a political democracy, then the Wahhabis will have lost a great battle there.
And by the Wahhabis, you're speaking really of the people who run Saudi Arabia, who are so very close to the current administration.
Well, the Wahhabis or Al-Qaeda, Taliban, the very fundamentalists, the ones who don't believe in democracy. They think that, or any form of secular government. They believe that God tells them how to act and their clerics will govern them, and the idea of electing a government, or the idea of the notion of government by consent of the governed just doesn't work for them. So it's not us they don't like. They don't like the concept of democracy.
All right, well, let's get on. And, of course, you tell a number of stories about the heroic actions of these young men, these warriors. And certainly these are the elite of the elite. You know, in other words, these are the people who can really put up with just terrible suffering during their training. And only those, of course, who are willing to prevail will ever become Navy SEALs. And that's really sort of a badge of honor, isn't it?
Well, it is, and don't forget, they're just one set of military warriors. You know, you have a lot of other people that are very proud about what they do, are very dedicated professionals in their own right, and may have a similar or differing mission from the Navy SEALs. But Navy SEALs are trained to a very high degree, and very briefly, we look for three things when we train a Navy SEAL. Number one is certainly you're looking for some physical attributes, but this is really more of a mental thing. Are you mentally strong enough to put up with a lot of physical discomfort and pay the price to become a Navy SEAL? The second thing is there's a military skill set, and that involves parachuting, diving, communications, electronics, weaponry, information technology, a whole host of military skills that they have to master. And then the third thing, which is very important, is the warrior ethic. That's the moral foundation these men need to take into battle, because they make life and death decisions. They are responsible for what they do, and they have to have a moral foundation very firmly in place from which they can project their power or withhold the projection of that power in the as they discharge their duties.
And, of course, these men are trained in hand-to-hand combat. They learn how to kill people. That's what you do when you're a warrior. I mean, you were trained in this. And if you're not trained in it, you don't do it, you're not going to survive. Because it's amazing many times they put the special forces or SEALs into positions where they're massively outnumbered, and yet time and again they prevailed.
Well, I think, you know, the hand-to-hand combat is, you know, we talk about those things, but most of their skill set is a behind-the-gun skill set. They work in teams, and they don't surrender the ability to shoot unless they're really in a very bad place. So that most of their work is done behind the gun. Anytime they're outnumbered, that is certainly not by design. We had three of a four-man team were killed just because they were terribly outnumbered in a situation in Afghanistan. But that was not. They didn't go into that knowing that was going to happen, or that was not planned for. They can, you know, they obviously can do well when they are outnumbered, but that's not a situation we like to see them in at all.
Well, certainly the special forces and the SEALs teams, when we went into Afghanistan, this was primarily not a military, you know, the conventional military war, but it was more a special ops war, wasn't it?
Well, very much so, and I think we can thank Tommy Franks, who convinced President Bush and Secretary Rumsfeld that he wanted an unconventional effort in this country. And the Russian Army, with many divisions for a decade, hammered away there and couldn't do it. And a handful, primarily, of Army Special Forces soldiers with the Northern Alliance and a generous dose of American precision air power did what the Russian Soviet Army couldn't do in a decade.
I remember reading one story about that. You know, that they were talking about something like 30,000 Afghans and Taliban and Al-Qaeda killed, and, you know, the loss of, maybe just one or two American lives. It was the most amazing story.
Well, it was, and don't forget, that unconventional warfare as skill set, as practiced by Army Special Forces, was magnificent. It'll be a classic. The Northern Alliance, they were tribal, but it was their chance to get their country back, and their tribal, you know, and they're back to squabbling over it to some degree. But basically, it was a tremendous leveraging of talent within our special operations community.
And, of course, really, these are very, very well-trained, highly skilled individuals. The problem, my major problem with this whole thing is the politics of it. I know that's not your major thrust, but for our listeners, remember the Northern Alliance was strongly aligned with the communists who we fought for, all these years, and now we're aligned with them against the Taliban. So it's amazing how alliances, of course, change. However, that doesn't have anything to do with the heroism of our heroes. Would you like to tell about some of the stories that you tell in your book? Because I remember the one about boarding this book. What was it? The a Saddam Nur or something like that, the oil tanker,
well,
and how they were able to actually get on these oil tankers and stop the Saddam from breaking the oil embargo?
Well, this was well before, this was before 9/11, before we went into Afghanistan and before we really put the clamps on Saddam Hussein as far as a blockade goes. But there was not the oil, this is not the oil for food program that was so hideously mismanaged by the UN. This was straight out smuggling. And there's laws of the sea and protocols that we operated with as a signatory to those. But basically, we were trying to stop Saddam from smuggling oil on tankers, and they would head out to open ocean, and they would duck into the territorial waters of Iran or Yemen or some other friendly state, and we couldn't get to them.
And of course, you couldn't even have your men on board when they got into a nationalist water, so
no.
Anything you did, you'd have to do in international waters. And then the United Nations comes in and says you can't use any even explosive charges when you're trying to stop this illegal activity. And it was sort of reminded me of Vietnam. You know, when our planes, fighter planes, couldn't shoot a MiG would have sitting on the ground, had to be in the air firing at them before they could do it. And I just had a feeling as I read that book that we were putting so many barriers on the in the way of these fellows from doing the job that they were trained to do.
Right. Well, they knew that at the time, and it frustrated them, but I think that the point of that story was, even though given a set of circumstances, the rules of engagement, this is the way you got to play ball, that these smart young guys could sit down and say, okay, if these are the rules, let's figure out a way to play by the rules and beat them anyway. And they did. And so that's the story, how you figure out, okay, this is the way we got to play. How are we going to do this? And they figured out a way, and they stopped the smuggling of oil. They figured out a way to get through there, to board them, to break into them quicker, stop those ships, and they prevailed, even though the deck was maybe stacked against them in some respects. So that one particular story was more about the innovation of these men when they're confronted with a set of circumstances and they have to deal with it. And this goes on into all of warfare, and you'll notice throughout the book, every time there's an operation, there's a set of rules of engagement, what they have to operate under, and they're by and large are thought out to be, sometimes they're very restrictive in some cases, as when they went aboard those oil platforms at the beginning of the Iraqi campaign. Their rules of engagement were quite liberal because of the danger of blowing up those platforms and the fact these were Republican Guard that had a lot of explosives out there. Their rules of engagement were for somebody, you know, if he looks like he's doing the wrong thing, he deserves a bullet. And they were able to accomplish their mission and not abuse those very liberal rules of engagement that they were granted for that operation.
And so one of the major things that they were to do then was to preserve those oil platforms so we could preserve the oil production?
Well, that was it. And in one night, it was, I called it, the chapter's called Night of the Navy SEALs, but there were five targets and about six SEAL platoons plus various other people, Royal Marines and what have you, who attacked the infrastructure, took two platforms, two valve pumping stations, and a metering station, all at the same time, took them, kept them safe, there was no damage to them, and today 85% of Iraq's gross domestic product is oil revenue, and it's pumping for the Iraqi people, and you know they can thank the Navy SEALs for going in there and making sure Saddam didn't blow that up or destroy that, as he did during the first Gulf War.
Well, I think it's fascinating. Of course, these are very, very smart and very well highly conditioned and highly trained individuals, aren't they? And you point out that these people have very high intelligence. They have to even to qualify to be a SEAL. These are sort of the elite of the elite. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it would. And I think that, and again, not to shortchange the Special Forces and the Air Force Special Tactics teams, they also have very talented and very intelligent folks. You can be tough and you can be good and all that type of thing, but you need smart guys out there making decisions under those very stressful situations.
And of course, the thing is that the officers are right there with them. That they're not standing off someplace saying, you fellas, go ahead and do it. They're really leading and they're living under the miserable circumstances. And really, there's a tremendous camaraderie among the warriors, isn't there?
Oh, yes. And you find that in most special operations. units, but especially in the field. The officers suffer right along with the troops.
Hold that thought right there.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinix is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free. 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dick Kautz, and our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, Dick is an ex-SEAL himself. He'd been in Vietnam, and he writes a book entitled Downrange. You've written a number of books on the SEALs and their training, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've first written a lot of, I think 6 novels, but my first nonfiction work was the Warrior Elite, which detailed basic SEAL training and the Hell Week and just the things you think of when you think of SEALs being wet and sandy and tired and all that type of thing. Second, the follow-on to that was The Finishing School, and in my opinion, was a more interesting book in that it really got into the details of advanced SEAL training and the pre-deployment training, that what the training that SEALs do before they go overseas on deployment, and the real team-building aspect of building a combat team and taking it into harm's way. And then, of course, I just Random House and Crown there, we just came out with Downrange, and that talks about the dogs in the fight, what these men do when they're on deployment, how they do it, how they plan their operations and how they conduct them, and what is going on in their minds as they do this very difficult and dangerous work.
Well, you tell the story about Lieutenant John Rasmussen actually there in Baghdad. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, I was trying to get some feel for the urban operations where they go out. There's somebody they want to get their hands on, and how they go about trying to learn as much as they can before going to the target, and how they prepare themselves to do it. As they develop an operation, the intelligence comes in. Hopefully they have a source that can place the person they're looking for in the building they're going into. They're very well trained, a pretty well-oriented team, but as they have time, they will rehearse what they're going to do ahead of time, little walk through, then a run through before they hit the target. What I found very impressive with these young men in these assault teams as they're going in, especially in urban combat, they can go knock a door down and run into a house, and there's a lot of things going on. You've got old people there, you've got children, you've got aunts, uncles, neighbors, you don't know what dogs, you don't know what's going on in there, and you've got a very dangerous man in there. So they were saying, you know, sometimes we'll be in a house and we've got somebody has got a couple children there. They're keeping them off to one side, keeping them safe. Somebody's got a wife who is distraught and screaming and yelling. You've got some old people there that are just terrified, and you've got a bad guy who's got a gun. And you've got to manage this whole thing, get that guy, either disarm him or else, you know, take care of him. And yet you've got to protect and safeguard all these other people. And it takes a lot of skill and a lot of training to do this on a routine basis, and they do.
And, of course, the thing is that they're trained exactly in all sorts of combat and situations, and yet, of course, they have a moral obligation not to injure the civilians there.
Absolutely. No, they're held very strictly as they... They work on the concept of earned behavior. If you're going to shoot somebody, he has to earn the bullet. And you know, whether he's presenting a deadly threat to you, whether he's shooting at you, whether he's there's a set of criteria he has to do, and then they say, well, he's earned a bullet, and so they let him. They accommodate this individual there. But if there's another way, they like to take that, and it takes a lot of skill because you have to, first of all. It depends on the environment you're in. It depends on the skill of the Navy SEAL involved, and it depends on the skill and capability of your opponent. And if he's very unskilled, and well, then you can take a few more liberties. But if he's got a gun and he knows how to use it, then you have to act before he does, and you have to do it professionally and very appropriately.
But it's saying that you have to make split-second decisions, life and death decisions, and there's just no time to tarry, no chance to reason. You have to be able to do this automatically to protect yourself and the men you're with.
That's exactly right, and they practice many of the situations they find themselves in. They've trained again and again and again before they go over. So they're very well schooled in what to expect, and when they see something different, they got the tools to react differently to it. But it takes a lot of training to bring yourself to that level of competence in a combat situation.
And of course, these are superb physical condition. These fellows are just constantly, training so that they can survive in these very difficult situations. Well, when we get back, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24 Liberty, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest, Dick Couch, his book, Downrange. It's the story of the SEALs and the Navy SEALs engaged in the war on terrorism.
One of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dick Couch, his book, Downrange. And, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And this is just a fascinating insight into these very, very courageous men who really are over there. Totally, they're not concerned about the politics. They're concerned about the job that they have to do. And, of course, as you begin reading about some of the experiences here, now, did you talk to a lot of the SEALs to get these stories?
Yes, I did. Some of these young men I had known during their basic training or their advanced training stage, or they were among the training cadres when I was working on The Warrior Elite, my first SEAL book, and The Finishing School, the second. And some of them were just, you know, platoons that I had come in contact with over the years. But no, I talked to them when they came back, made sure that I was down there a couple days after they got back and got to see their families a little bit. But to sit down and talk to them about some of the specific operations, I knew some of the more important operations are the ones I had an interest in, so I found those individuals, and they were able to tell me what they did, how they did it, and again, in such a way that I have to be careful, we don't want to give away tactics and procedures, but what was on their mind when they were going into harm's way, when they were tasked this very important mission. By and large, the thing that came through loud and clear to me was they were very proud to have served, and all they wanted to do was talk about how good all the other men that they were privileged to work with had performed during these operations.
Sort of a brotherhood of there, then sort of a common brotherhood?
Oh, absolutely. They are brothers. They are a band of brothers. There's no question about that.
Now, of course, you write about the rescue efforts for fallen comrades. What's that about?
Well, there's it's a tenet among special operations and a lot of all of our military that if we have a a brother in trouble or a sister or a fallen comrade is in trouble, we'll bring them home. The SEALs have never left somebody behind. They're very proud of that. It almost goes back probably, in my mind, to Hal Moore in 1965 in the Ertrang Valley when he said, if you go in there with me, I'll bring you all home one way or another, and he did. But it's almost a sacred thing within our military and certainly our special operations that if a brother goes down or is left behind, we will do everything we can to reclaim him alive if we can and his remains if we can't so that he can go home.
All right, fine. Now, of course, you actually were with the CIA for some time, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
All right, fine, for a number of years. That, of course, you really can't talk too much about that, I'm sure.
Well, not much, but I will say that I am very proud to have served in the CIA as I was to have served in the Navy SEAL teams.
All right, fine. Now, how hunting and eliminating the remainder of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, the problem was that, the Al-Qaeda was allowed to escape into Pakistan along with Omar and Osama bin Laden. Why weren't our special forces allowed to take him out? Why weren't they allowed to seal the border and stop this whole thing? Instead of pulling out and going over into Iraq, why didn't they finish the war in Afghanistan?
Well, that's a very complex question. It's why can't we stop drugs coming into America? Why can't we control our borders? Why can't we do a whole bunch of things or eliminate child abuse? These are difficult and tough things.
But we're really not trying to seal our borders, nor are we trying to stop the drugs, really.
Well, I think that it had to do with a lot of border area, a rough area, and limited personnel up there to do the job.
But I think that they could have done it if they'd been allowed to.
Well, I don't, I'm not so sure we had the personnel to do it there. It was... that's very difficult. You take something in the state of California and you put about, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 guys in there. That's a pretty tough thing to do. If they want to, you live in the Monterey area. If they're in Monterey, flowing out into Big Sur, and you've got a handful of people to stop them, you may not get them all stopped. And they all have guns.
But the thing is that was the reason we went to war with Afghanistan, was to get Osama bin Laden. So instead of getting Osama bin Laden, then suddenly we were going after Osama bin Saddam. So, this is the thing I think that a lot of people here really are concerned about, is that they did not finish the job, and they use that as a stepping stone, to getting into Iraq, which of course got us, which is not what the American people really bought into this for originally.
Well, we're getting into some pretty heavy political turf here, and I don't mind doing that. It's just that my focus is the young men in the fight, what they're asked to do, and how they accomplish those missions. I will say that now that we are there, we're faced with a full-blown insurgency, both certainly in Iraq and to some extent in Afghanistan. And our success there is going to depend upon our counterinsurgency skills. Now, we're pretty good at technology and maneuver warfare, and we're pretty good with using weapons and precision air power, but this is an insurgency, so we need those cross-cultural skills. We need to work with the Afghanis and the Iraqis to gain their trust, to let them know that we're going to stand by them when the bad guys come back or try to come back, but they have to help us to find them, identify them, and to purge them from their society, or they're in for a long, hard road, and our objectives there certainly won't be met as well.
And I certainly share your concern that we may be there for a very, very long time. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. This is a fascinating book about a group of very heroic people, and of course, Dick has talked to them, he's got their stories, and as they really go into combat time after time, and really they're really totally dependent upon good intelligence, aren't they?
Absolutely. The name of the game is intelligence. In a different way, they say, it's not all that hard to kick the door down and go and grab somebody or somebody who needs to be grabbed, but finding the right door to kick. And we can't do this without the help of the locals. So the big thing is timely intelligence, operable intelligence, accurate intelligence so that we can take that information and go and make it harder for the insurgents to do their job.
You talk about, you know, the use of the satellites, you know, from outer space, that, you know, the fantastic ability to see what's going on the ground. And then, of course, the non-manned planes that we have up there, Predators. And they were really very, very beneficial in providing all sorts of information on the insurgents, weren't they? And the location of the enemy forces?
Well, they were, and early on, you know, this was this stuff worked pretty well. Cell phone intercepts, our electronic intercept capabilities, our ability to use satellite imagery, unmanned vehicles, UAVs, this all worked. But this is a pretty smart and pretty resourceful enemy. They're changing, and they're hiding now in the populations, in the caves, and they're doing their best to deny us our marvelous technology and our capabilities in maneuver warfare. So, again, it's an insurgency. We have to develop the counterinsurgency tools. We have technology to help us, but a lot of it is sitting down and having a cup of tea with that Afghani or that Iraqi and understand his problems, getting to know him, gaining his trust. Maybe he'll tell you what you want to know as far as how to find out where these bad guys are.
But aren't they, if you're an Iraqi and you are found in having a cup of tea with an American, isn't your life in danger? And I've talked to other people who've been over there, and they've talked about how the Iraqis that talked to them, and the next thing they knew, they were targets of the insurgents. So the Iraqis, poor, they're really caught, you know, between both sides. If they favor the Americans, they're going to get into trouble. If they don't favor the Americans, they're going to get into trouble. Aren't the Iraqis really trapped in this situation?
Well, they are, and it's a tough go, but it's their country, and they're going to have to undertake some risks just like our people are. And in many cases, we need to work with them in such a way if they need to be protected or they need some anonymity of this, that we do that as well. There are ways to do this, you know, if there is are threats to their life. But I think, again, this is part of the counterinsurgency business that we're going to have to master if we're going to beat this insurgency.
All right, well, let's go to Lillian, who's calling from Pacific Grove, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Out across America, and here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. Lillian, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do, please. In the first place, it breaks my heart to hear our fine men and women over there, in fact, anywhere, fighting in a war that's illegal. Our Constitution says we cannot go to war against a sovereign nation unless they have attacked us first, or some of our individuals.
No, well, of course, it doesn't really say that, Lillian. There's no, but the right to, of course, declare war is the right of Congress, but Congress has abrogated that, and they've repeatedly voted to support what the administration is doing, and yet they never had the courage to declare war, so it's sort of a difficult situation.
But, Stan, they aren't thinking about the Constitution. That they don't even teach it in schools anymore.
Well, that is true.
Did you have
a question for our guest?
Yes, I want to tell him that the people are praying for the people that are over there putting their lives on the line for an illegal war, and that I personally pray for them every night, and God has been good to answer many of my prayers, and I admire them for giving it the very best they can. And I think they're fighting with one arm tied in back of them, with videotapes and things like that, and then being punished for how they fight the enemy. It isn't fair the way our soldiers are being treated.
All right, well, let's get Don's response, Dick's response to that. Dick, how would you respond to Lillian's remark?
Well, I think that, the political aspect, I'm just going to duck that one, and the constitutional issues there. I mean, we all need to discuss these things. Your points are very valid, but I do, on behalf of those young men deployed on their behalf and those of their families, I'd like to thank you for your prayers. I hope they're answered. I know they help, and I know they appreciate your prayers.
Okay, anything else you want to say, Lillian?
No, I just want to say God bless you and all the wonderful work you do and all the sacrifices you make to do what you're doing, Stan.
God bless you. Thanks, Lillian. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Lillian calling from Pacific Grove. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the issue is not should we be there. Certainly we could debate that in a different setting. But certainly Dick has written a book about the heroism of our boys who are over there. And they certainly are putting themselves in harm's way. And yet they're doing the best job they possibly can in almost an impossible situation. This is the real problem. Now, with the SEALs still operating there, and now that we have the large army unit, certainly they would have been operating in Afghanistan before the heavy military commitment there. And of course, the same thing would be true in Iraq. But are they still operating there, outside the regular chain of command?
Well, they never operate outside the regular chain of command, and quite often they work hand in glove with coalition forces. You don't want to be out there running around.
Oh, I don't mean
without some people knowing that you're there and
right.
You're friendly. But I think that they're tasked with certain things, and they have a chain of command, and they don't just independently go out and do things. If they get some intelligence or develop some intelligence or moving on an operation, then that moves up the chain of command, certainly to deconflict that there's Americans out there and people know about it. But quite often they have to lay a lot of support on. They need assets from the conventional or coalition military forces to help them when they're out there. And so that has to be coordinated. But to my knowledge, they are still operating in Afghanistan, as we found that all too sadly here a couple weeks back when we lost a lot of our SEALs and Army aviators in a special operations mission, and of course they're still in Iraq as well.
All right, so they're there, they're operating, but they're given specific tasks, and basically they operate different than a regular military unit, don't they? In other words, they still have a chain of command, but they're tremendous initiative on their part.
Well, there is. They're tasked with, sometimes they're handed a mission. Hey, there's a bad guy here, or there's a facility that may be making explosives. That's a target we want you to go take care of, and they develop how they're going to do it, and under what conditions they're going to do it, and they come up with their own plan as to how to do that. Sometimes they will generate their own targeting. Hey, we found somebody, or we found something, and then they will pass that. They need to. If they have to move quickly, then that word gets passed up. We are on the way, and. We are moving in this area. We're moving against this target. Unless otherwise directed, we're launching. And sometimes that will go up for a permission. It may be something that could be sensitive and needs to be deconflicted with other groups in the area or other considerations. In which case, they will maybe seek permission to go ahead and prosecute a target that they've developed.
Well, of course, now they really started out as frogmen, didn't they? Weren't the SEALs original frogmen?
Yes, we. The SEALs were commissioned, our first SEAL teams, in 1962, SEAL Team 1 in Coronado and SEAL Team 2 in Norfolk. But we trace our lineage back to the frogmen back during the Second World War, who first went ashore at the combat demolition units in North Africa and then across the Pacific. And, of course, we had a lot of men on those beaches at Omaha and Utah Beach during the Normandy invasions.
And so they've been around for a long time. They have a very, very proud tradition there. There are only very, very few SEALs. Most people really don't even get through training, do they?
Well, we work, we're not terribly proud of our numbers in getting these people through, but it's about 1 in 5 that we're able to come into this training and who think they want to be Navy SEALs and try to be, and maybe 1 in 5 makes it through this course. They're screened before they come in, but there's a lot to learn. It's a painful process, a lot of cold water and a lot of physical exercise, but also there's the mental disciplines that I mentioned before, and of course the ethical foundation that we're looking for in a fully formed, complete SEAL warrior.
And you're something, train the best and discard the rest. That was a slogan that they had. Is that a fairly accurate slogan?
Well, I think that what it is that they in the early days, they, rather than train a whole bunch of people and then subject them to some hardship to see if they could handle the hardship, then you just trained a bunch of people that you really can't use because they can't meet the physical standards. So they early on, they want to create a very difficult physical environment to see if you can stand up to this type of punishment or cold water or physical challenge. And so you train the best. So they do this early on. So you get your attrition right up front before you've wasted a lot of time and money. And then you get those few who have maybe the desire or the aptitude or ability to go forward with the program, and then you train them. And that doesn't denigrate. I mean, there's been some fine people that have, quote, washed out of SEAL training. They've gone on to serve their country very well and very valiantly, and so there's no shame in not being able to get through this program. It's just not for everyone.
Well, they tell you, 5 days, and of course, 5 days with 5 hours of sleep, that'd be hard for anybody to take.
It is a challenge. There's no question about that.
Well, thank you so very much. Our guest has been Dick Couch, and his book is Downrange, and it's available, I'm sure, at any bookstore. And thanks very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on your program.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is a fascinating subject. It's a tragic subject. These are brave young men that we're sending over there. The tragedy is that the elite who rule the world look upon them as cannon fodder, and for a statement on that, Bertrand Russell's book, An Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism, Bertrand Russell's book entitled The Impact of Science on Society, pages 50 and 51. If you want those pages, we'll send it to you. And, of course, Henry Kissinger's remark about our military simply being stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy. That, I believe, page 194 of the final days of Woodward and Bernstein, but we'll send those pages to you too. Understand that the elite has a different outlook than the common people. On who are the elite? Well, you really want to read our latest newsletter. It's called The Occult Hierarchy Part 2. And it's available up on the internet, or we'll send you a free copy if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The book is based, at least in part, upon article is based in part upon a book written by Wayne Peterson called Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary People. Extraordinary Beings, I'm sorry. Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Beings. And we do carry the book. You have to order it especially. It's not on our regular book list. But it is with the occult literature that we do carry, the writings of Manly P. Hall and other occult writers who are deeply involved in the occult. So the books are available. You have to specifically ask for Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Beings. So, and then, of course, to really see this thing in its true perspective, why you would need to get our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. You would want to get the Johanna Michelson's book entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil, because Johanna was a medium, and of course she had an opportunity to contact the other side on a regular basis, and was really being trained as an apprentice for a medium, a psychic surgeon who was doing amazing of surgery on people that had been given up by regular medicine and they were being cured. But of course, she was tapping into the secrets of the other world. And of course, it was demonic power that was allowing it to do that. So that's The Beautiful Side of Evil. You really need to get Gary Kaw's excellent books entitled The Demonic Roots of Globalism, because that's the major driving force behind America's foreign policy today. Our globalism, our idea of sending our jobs and our factories and our wealth to other countries, it's all part of this demonic plan. That's The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw, and certainly his other book, which entitled The New World Order. And we carry both of those books. You may even want to get Tal Brooks' excellent book, One World. Tal was a disciple of Sai Baba's, deeply involved in the occult, until he had a religious conversion and became a Christian. He tells that story in his Avatar of Night book, The Avatar of Night. And actually, Tal was being trained to bring these ideas to the United States and to convert literally millions of Americans into this occult belief. Others have taken his place, and America's moving rapidly from being a Christian nation to being a pagan nation. We have a special. We call it the Pagan Agenda Special. You really need to get it. You really need to understand what we're up against and why the Christian church is changing, why the music of the church is changing, why the message of the church is changing, why the very structure of what is going on in our services is changing. It's not happening by accident. If you need to get information on the New Age movement, the book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, The Light That Was Dark, if you want the church growth movement, Deceived on Purpose, and, of course, Who's Driving the Purpose-Driven Church, and so much more, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, because Christianity is under attack. There is a conspiracy against God, against the God of the Bible. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.